Welcome to FIC Focus, where Bloomberg Intelligence fixed income, credit currency, and commodities strategists and analysts discuss their short and long-term views on debt markets and issuers. Now, here's the Bloomberg Intelligence FIC research team.
Welcome to the FIC Focus podcast. This is a Macro Matters edition. I'm Ira Jersey, the chief U.S. interest rate strategist for Bloomberg Intelligence, the research arm of Bloomberg LP. As we're recording today on the 25th day of April 2024, we're less than a week away from two very important data points for rate markets. First, we're going to have at 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday morning, May the 1st, we're going to have the quarterly refunding announcement from the Treasury Department. We're not expecting any major changes to coupon issuance, but the details will always be important, and I'm sure we'll get a lot of attention, particularly from those who are worried about how much cash the Treasury Department's going to have and how that might affect the Fed's balance sheet. And then at 2 o'clock, we get the Federal Reserve statement, and at 2:30, Chair Powell will once again have his post-meeting press conference. Obviously, there's a lot going on. This morning, we received a GDP report that was worse than expectations, but still, there were definitely signs of robustness in some spending categories like services, which was up pretty significantly. The misses were in durable goods, particularly auto sales, as well as government spending was lower than I think a lot of people were expecting. So, hot in some areas, not as hot in others, but importantly, the PCE deflator on the core PCE deflator in particular was up 3.7% on an annualized basis during the quarter, obviously far higher than what the Federal Reserve wants to see. So the markets have been selling off. The 10-year Treasury has broken an important resistance level of 4.7% as we record in the morning right after that GDP report. So the next stopping point for the 10-year yield will be upwards of 5%. And 2-year yields might continue to rise even further, because the path of least resistance, I think, at this point is for the market to price for the Federal Reserve to be on hold for the rest of the year and maybe into 2025. We are heading that way, and I suspect that we'll continue to see the market start to price for that eventuality, which it has been, in fairness, over the last 6 weeks or so. When you look at the options market, our model suggests to us that there's around a 30% chance that the Fed's either on hold or even increases interest rates before the end of this year. So there's a significant shift in market sentiment and market tone, just given the fact that hard data continues to come out reasonably strong, even if some of the survey data is still somewhat weak. But today, the focus of this podcast will be on the housing market in general and the mortgage market in particular. I have Erica Edelberg with us. She was our co-host a couple of weeks ago when we talked about this topic. But today we're going to ask her to be our guest and talk a bit about the mortgage market in general, the housing market, and the trends there. But also with us is associate strategist Will Hoffman. Will is in the market for a new place to live. His lease is up soon. So, you know, I've been anecdotally asking him about his experience, because the rental market is actually what feeds into owner's equivalent rent in the CPI report and some of the other inflation data that we look at. So Will, how have you found the apartment hunting experience in the spring of 2024?
Well, it's certainly not the war stories we hear from Manhattan and all of my siblings and friends who go through the congratulations, you have 7 days to find and move into a new apartment. But things are still very competitive down here. The supply of multifamilies has, at least from our perspective, has grown. There's more apartment complexes that we've been able to look for versus when I first moved here several years ago. And the pricing that we're seeing in some of these new leases is relatively more attractive than what we're rolling out of, particularly with the potential for rent increases if we had stayed in the same apartment. But as it stands now, we were able to find something that's almost 50% more space for actually the exact same amount our current rent is and a little bit less than our future rent in the same place would have been. But it was absolutely still a foot race down to the wire. I mean, we beat the next people with their application by less than an hour, and a lot of people still want apartments, especially with where housing is. But I will leave that to the experts.
Yeah, so we'll pivot now to Erica. Erica, thanks for coming back on FIC Focus.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's talk, before we talk about the mortgage market in particular, let's talk a little bit about the housing market and some of the trends you've seen there. So like Will was saying, you know, there has been more building. We've gotten some new home sales numbers. Maybe talk a little bit about the distinction between the new home sales reports that we get and the existing home sales numbers, which affect your, you know, the mortgage market, the MBS market, much more than the than it does, say, you know, the rental market or the new house market.
Yeah, there's a couple interesting. First of all, we've been talking about this being a tale of two housing markets for a while now, because new homes had become a much less important part of the housing market, as well as the new issue mortgage-backed securities market, for a long time after the financial crisis. Basically, builders just completely pulled back. And as a result, we're now seeing a pretty significant undersupply of housing relative to demand in terms of the existing housing stock, because so little was built in the past 15 years. And builders are really rushing to take advantage of that opportunity now. It's interesting they can do so in a time of such high mortgage rates and such low affordability, but they're finding all sorts of ways to compensate. They're building smaller homes, they're building more multifamily homes, and significantly, they're also buying down mortgage rates to the extent that borrowers need mortgage rates. So we're actually seeing loan applications, mortgage loan applications for new home purchases, building new construction, I should say, purchases, near the highs really since the financial crisis, whereas you're seeing existing home loan purchases, applications to buy an existing home, a mortgage application, you know, pretty much still near 25-year lows for this time of year. You know, April's traditionally a little stronger than, let's say, December. But for this time of year, we're seeing people trying to use a mortgage to buy an existing home, the loan applications for those at 25-year lows. So really big divergence, and it all comes down to availability, really, but also affordability, because quite frankly, the other way that new construction homes are competing is they are building smaller homes. So while the average or median, I should say, new home is still more expensive than the median existing home, there's a lot more of the, you know, cost efficient levels that are being built as well. So the size of the loan application for these new construction is actually smaller than the size of the mortgage loan application for existing homes, which is an unusual trend.
Before we get into some things in the mortgage market itself, and Will's going to come in here in a moment and ask you something about it, to talk, what's the difference and how has the structure changed in the mortgage market in terms of, you know, down payments that are needed, the non-agency market, you know, agency market. You've harped on this, like loan sizes being much larger for agency mortgages. Talk a little bit about that structure and how that's affected the availability of housing credit.
Well, so housing credit itself, like if you just look at the credit availability indices, is still relatively low. But the people who need mortgages right now are more and more the first-time home buyers. Now, the funny thing about that, or ironic thing about that, is they're also more crowded out of the market, because the reason they're the ones needing mortgages, because there's a lot more cash buyers coming into the market who can take equity from their existing home and just buy a new home outright and not have to worry about these high mortgage rates. So even though there's a growth in the all cash buyer market, in terms of people who are taking out mortgages, it's more the first time home buyers, and they are migrating towards the Ginnie Mae sector, towards the government loans, the FHA, VA loans. When the housing market was super, super hot, and it's still pretty hot, they couldn't even get their foot in the door to buy a new home, because it takes a little bit more bureaucracy, if you will, to try to take out one of these FHA VA loans, but they're able to compete now, and they're actually that's making the Ginnie Mae sector, which is backed by these FHA VA loans, grow at the expense of conventional mortgages, which actually have shrunk the outstanding amount of conventional, which Fannie and Freddie have shrunk over time. But yeah, in general, even the FHA VA loans are growing in size as the housing market continues to appreciate at the margin. So all in, that does make those loans probably more negatively convex, the new issue, which means that they will refinance quicker, and if you buy one and rates fall, you'll probably not benefit as that much from the rally if you own one of these high loan size mortgages.
Erica, real quick, just pivoting to kind of next week's excitement with the Fed meeting, and our focus is very, very much on balance sheet policy rather than rates, as we expect that to be absolutely unchanged in the month of May, barring anything crazy here in the next 5 days. But that said, could you talk a little bit about the implications to a continuation in MBS runoff from the Fed's portfolio, what that means for your market and some of the underlying maybe demand dynamics, as well as the relative value implications versus, say, just the broad rates market?
Right. As you guys have written about yourselves, while the Fed may consider, and I don't want to steal your thunder on this, but the Fed may consider slowing the rate at which they're allowing the Treasury portfolio to run off, and I'll let you guys cover that. It's very unlikely they will do so with the mortgage market. Their desire is to move towards the Treasury-only portfolio. At the margin, that could increase bank demand for all securities because the Fed will not be letting their Treasury portfolio run off. But on the flip side, as they continue to let the mortgage portfolio run off, and therefore more mortgages at the margin have to be absorbed by private investors relative to Treasuries, that could have a little bit of a headwind for mortgage spreads. But on the positive side, the amount of runoff is already well below the caps. 15 billion is a strong month. 15, 20 billion is a strong month with the caps at 35 billion. And refis are going to continue to be very slow, not to mention the fact that the Fed's portfolio is mostly concentrated in low coupon mortgages that were issued when they were buying them during quantitative easing, 2.5. I think the average WAC is like 3.2. So the average homeowner rate backing these mortgages they own is 3.2. Those people are continuing to move at a very, very slow rate because they don't want to give up their mortgages. And, there's very little incentive to refi. I mean, a few of them might do some cash outs given the home price appreciation, but the turnover on those mortgages is extremely slow, which translates into very slow pay downs, which means the amount that's actually running off of the Fed's portfolio is going to continue to be low. That will also decrease overall new issue supply into the markets in general. We do have that small amount of first-time home buyers and small amount of new homes that are probably contributing at the margin to gross supply, but generally speaking, both net and gross supply are going to be relatively limited with mortgage rates where they are. So, the Fed's runoff isn't a benefit for the mortgage market. Obviously, other investors have to buy both a combination of what they're not reinvesting effectively and also the new issue supply. But it's very low by historical standards generally.
So if with housing prices continuing to climb, particularly for existing homes, and the fact that you don't have the turnover for the reasons that you mentioned, right? People, loathe to either refinance or move because they have very low mortgage rates that are locked in. Are people doing other forms of financing? So you mentioned cash out refis, but has things like home equity lines of credit or any kind of home equity type of payouts, has that been increasing? Is that another source of cash and availability for the household sector, or has that remained reasonably stable?
There's a push towards home equity lending. Generally speaking, you have to have really superior credit to be able to take those out. And, there's only so many people who have that type of superior credit who even want the extra home equity line. There has also been, since people are staying in place, there actually has been some increase in people wanting to do home improvements. They figure they don't want to give up their current mortgage to buy a bigger home. So maybe they add a better heating source or an addition to their home. Or I know I've talked to some people, maybe even on this call, who've considered taking out a home equity line of credit to buy an entirely new home. So, you know, for cash, effectively. The problem is those home equity line of credits still have extremely high rates for most people. I mean, like, you know, 8-9%. So it hasn't really been a great source of cash for anybody who doesn't have a cheaper source of funding. It does help some people pay off their credit cards as well. But it's still, you know, relatively expensive. So we haven't seen a big increase in that. One interesting possible permutation on that is that Freddie Mac recently announced that they would like to get permission to buy second liens, at which point that could bring down that rate quite a bit and allow people to tap their home equity. And that may, so it depends on who you talk to, but that may actually happen if Fannie Mae gets on board as well. There's pushback in both directions. There are those who want people to want be able to tap that home equity to as a, you know, improving their wealth effect effectively of housing. And there are others who feel like that's not the business of Fannie and Freddie. They're supposed to be making housing more affordable at the margin, not in fact just letting people tap equity in their homes to take on even more debt. So I'm not sure. I'd say the odds are 50-50, but I don't really have insider knowledge on that. But that could be an interesting development to watch. And it would, at the margin, probably slow down mortgages for these lower coupons even more, because they'd have even less incentive to use a cash-out refi to try to tap equity in their homes.
Great. So talk a little bit about valuation. And you had put out a note earlier this week looking at the valuations across the coupon stack and how performance has been between 2.5s and 4s and 4.5s and I guess now 5s. Talk a little bit about the different valuation along coupons and where you see any value and what sectors maybe you'd avoid.
Sure. I'm going to get you a little up to date here, Ira. The only coupon currently trading above a par dollar price is 6.5s. So when I'm saying higher coupons, I'm really talking 6.5, 7s. 5s are still
Fives used to be the highest that I ever saw. So, you know, this is least in the last 20 years.
Yeah. With mortgage rates having topped 8%, we're having a fairly tradable issuance now in like 6.5s, for instance, and 6s. So what we've seen is, not surprisingly, when you sell off shorter durations, your securities do better. And the reason these higher coupons are shorter duration is because the odds that the market prices in of a potential refinancing is greater. In other words, the potential for you to get your cash back sooner is greater, which reduces the duration, reduces the interest rate, quote unquote, interest rate sensitivity, or how much it will move with rates, right? So the higher coupons, just on a total return basis, have done a lot better this year than the lower coupons, especially in April, as we've sold off as much as we have. The durations of the lower securities, because these people are going to be paying down their mortgages forever because they don't want to ever move, as we just said, is closer to 8 to 9 years. So, you know, those are moving down. They're moving like a 10-year treasury, whereas these higher coupons are moving like a 2 to 3 year treasury. And just in price terms, yield alone, but just in price terms, that's a much smaller move. So on a total return basis, the higher coupons have done better. But what we've also been interested and fascinated to see is just how much better they've done, even if you net out treasury hedges, what we call excess return of treasury hedges. And that's despite the fact that volatility has picked back up. And that's really a combination of several different things. The better carry from the higher coupons does stabilize returns, but mostly it's just spread tightening as the market becomes less and less concerned about refinancing risks as rates rise, and more concerned about extension risk or people never prepaying, never moving on the lower coupons. So if you have like a $71 price security and your only advantage, you'll have to wait many, many years to get your amortized principal down. You're hoping these people relocate so maybe you can get that principal paid off a little bit sooner. That's becoming less and less likely as rates rise. Whereas the odds of somebody refinancing and you pay 101 for a security and giving you back your security, your principal at par faster, that risk has gone down. So that's really pushed people towards these higher coupons. And I think there's also an element of banks coming back into the market to some degree. I wouldn't say they're back, you know, as fully as they have been in the past, but they tend to also prefer the securities closer to par or just above par. The reason is, again, less interest rate risk effectively. while they're getting good carry, good coupon carry. So for them, the book yields are a lot more attractive, and they're taking out securities that are going to behave more like their liability side of the balance sheet, which is their deposits.
That's great. That was Erica Edelberg, the chief mortgage strategist for Bloomberg Intelligence. And on behalf of Erica, as well as Will Hoffman here in studio with me, I appreciate you listening. And if you have any ideas for hosts or topics you'd like us to contact in the future and to talk about on our show, please reach out to us on the Bloomberg Terminal. And until next time, be well.